We've now switched to the actual serving area and kitchen of the multicultural kosher dining hall. Today they, as you can see, are serving a dairy meal, which means we're using the blue trays, and all of the food here is dairy. And one of the points I'd like to make is there is tuna fish. Fish, which I hadn't mentioned before, is actually parv. It's another one of the animal products that is parv. So what you have is a noodle casserole, and there is a kitchen behind us, which is the dairy kitchen. Far behind, you can see in the background that there's an area that's closed off. That's the meat kitchen. The meat kitchen today is closed because we only serve either a meat meal or a dairy meal in this kitchen. And today being dairy, we're not serving meat. And other parts that you can't see on camera are also not being used because they're meat, including an entire second kitchen. So one of the hard parts in food service is that essentially you need separate kitchens for the meat part and for the dairy part. With that introduction, I'd like to now go into the next section. Having looked at Heckscher's, we now want to look at a broader look at both the industry view of kosher and some of the demographics and economic issues that come in with kosher. And as I hope you saw this on the earlier section, where we showed you a lot of products, some of which you recognize as normal products, there are a great deal of food products that have Heckscher's on them, and we're now beginning to see more and more products with the Muslim markings on them. And clearly, from a business point of view, it's a business. Are there enough customers and enough value added that, in fact, it is worthwhile to do? There are expenses, both practical expenses in operating and the expense of the supervision. The supervisors are paid for their work. And so the companies that choose to get involved feel it is a good business decision. And apparently, in modern times, it's even a better decision because we will see more and more companies are going kosher these days, and more companies are going halal. This brings up the whole interface between religion and modern technology, modern food handling practices, and the need for both the rabbis to understand what the food industry is doing, to understand the technical aspects, and for people in the food industry, for example, the people working here, to at least have a reasonable understanding of the kosher laws. So the question is, who is actually buying kosher halal foods? To a certain extent, we really don't know, but we do know what groups are potential audiences and which groups might, in fact, find kosher worthwhile for their purchases. The first group is obviously those of the Jewish faith, of which we have about 6 million Jews in the United States, although only a relatively small percentage of Jews actually keep kosher in the strictest sense of having all kosher products. We know that many Muslims purchase kosher products, particularly the dairy and parv products, and some Muslims, depending on their traditions, will in fact eat kosher meat when halal meat is not available. Seventh-day Adventists and other vegetarian-oriented groups will also often use the parv and dairy markings to help them purchase foods that meet their dietary needs, recognizing that the parv mark is essentially a vegetarian vegan mark, with the exception that we've already pointed out that eggs, honey, and fish are also parv, but generally speaking, those are well marked on packages and help them identify products they would like to use. And of course, included in the vegetarian category are a number of the Eastern religions. In addition, there are people with certain types of allergies that find the kosher markings helpful. As we mentioned earlier, if you're allergic to dairy, you can avoid dairy products by buying either parv or meat products. If you are allergic to various grains, the products for Passover are also useful. Finally, we have two other groups that I need to explain in a little more detail. The first is the quality conscious consumer. That is, because of these extra rules, companies producing these foods have to go through additional steps and have to have their whole organization of their production or their food service more carefully controlled. And in the same vein, there are consumers who have come to realize that, unfortunately, our Food and Drug Administration is unable to inspect food facilities in as often as most people would like. In fact, we know that some plants are not inspected are inspected about once every 10 years. And the rabbis, even in the simplest of plants, generally are there once every half a year or so. Often there continuously, in many cases once a month. But even in a plant that there's very little to worry about, they try to get in about twice a year. So that means that these plants are subject to a great deal more inspection. And a lot of consumers have come to realize that whatever it is the rabbis are looking for, in fact, these plants are under better control. To look at kosher demographics a little more specifically, we have about 6 million Jews, as I pointed out, 6 million consumers. However, in the kosher market, we also use a figure of about 6 million people purchasing kosher, of which about two-thirds are not Jewish. And that's an important figure to get your handle on, in that, in fact, all those other groups I talked about actually represent the dominant part of the market. The fact is that most Jews do not keep kosher. We estimate that about 70% are not kosher. Now, that doesn't mean that on special occasions, such as Passover, some of them do become part of the kosher market. But on an ongoing basis, we estimate that there are about 800,000 homes that keep kosher essentially on a year-round basis, recognizing that some of the Orthodox families are larger than traditional families. So it is probably more like 2.5 million people who keep kosher. In Israel, we have an interesting situation in that there are 4 million Jews, only 20% are Orthodox, yet 80% of the Israeli population basically operates kosher. And of course, worldwide, because of the losses during the Holocaust, the number of Jews are down in numbers and are only about 14 million Jews worldwide. Now, in contrast, let's look at the halal demographics. We estimate that there are about 4 million Muslims in the United States. That's a fairly controversial figure. I've heard estimates as low as 2 to 2.5 million, and I've heard estimates as high as 8 to 9 million. The 4 million seems to be the best available number, but this is really one that's up for grabs. What's interesting in the Muslim community is that most people who call themselves Muslim do observe some parts of the halal law. Most specifically, they do not eat pork. One does not generally find a Muslim who calls himself a Muslim who will eat pork. Keeping some of the other rules are a little less stringent. How many in America actually fast for all of Ramadan? How many do not take in any alcohol, mainly through the flavors and things like that? That's probably a smaller population, but we have much less survey data on the behavior within the Muslim community than we have within the Jewish community. But the important thing to think about from a food industry point of view, from where we're going in the world, is that over 1 billion people, possibly as high as 1.3 billion people, are Muslim around the world. Many countries require products to be halal before they're permitted entry. And so as we go to a globalization of the food supply, one has to recognize that somewhere between 1 out of 5 to 1 out of 6 of everybody on the face of the earth is Muslim. And this represents both a tremendous opportunity and a tremendous challenge to feed these people and within the context of the halal rules. One of the questions we're often asked is how large is the kosher market in economic terms? And how does it play out in different scenarios? Here it's a difficult number to get a hold of. We have some estimates, but there's an important distinction that we've got to make sure we all understand. As you saw earlier when we were in the stock room, many of the standard products that everybody is buying have kosher markings on them. The total amount of product that has kosher markings on them is about $50 to $75 billion. That is a fairly significant portion of the grocery section of most supermarkets. We estimate that 30 to 40% of the grocery goods in a typical supermarket are kosher. In fact, I've had students in my Food Science 250 Kosher and Halal Food Regulations course actually go into the supermarket in Ithaca that least caters to the Jewish community. That is, it does not have some of the specialized sections that are now available in some of their competitors. And in taking over 3,000 food items, we found that in fact it was closer to 50% of the products here in Ithaca, which is not the heart of the Jewish community, which is more of the large cities of New York, Boston, and so forth, actually were kosher markings. However, though we have all these products with the kosher marking, only a small percentage of that is being purchased by people who are buying it knowingly and because it has a kosher mark. And so the estimate of how much is actually the kosher market, that is people who buy kosher products knowing it, is really more like $5 billion. So we, even though we have $50 to $75 billion worth of product that have kosher markings, the actual sales to intentional purchases, we estimated about 10% of that at $5 to $7.5 billion. However, a large proportion of those sales are to Jews. That is, even though I said two-thirds of the kosher market is non-Jewish, and the figure some folks use is as low as 20% is Jewish, in terms of the dollar volume for kosher, it is actually over 50%. And a lot of that special purchasing, particularly of Jews who do not keep kosher all year round, occurs around Passover. The week of Passover, people purchase a lot of new products specifically for the holiday, products that are made only with matzah if they contain any grain, or in fact, a large number of products that are free of all grains and also free of corn and rice and things like that. And it's that corn that is actually the important part, because corn syrup and corn syrup derivatives are an important ingredient in many foods in the United States. And a lot of that kosher purchasing does occur around the holiday of Passover. One of the unusual aspects of kosher in a few of the states in the United States is that the secular governments have gotten involved in helping to promote kosher on the basis that these are important economic industries, that they are generating business for the state, so that New York, for example, has a director of kosher marketing, and Florida actually has gone so far as to put together a logo and to do some active kosher promotion. And in the slide at this point, one can see the Kosher from Florida logo, which they've put on all kinds of things, including cups. I have one at home where I drink my morning juice in a Kosher from Florida cup.